welcome to Didion Hawthorne in the In-Between, or DHNI. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to our podcast about the relevance of literature in the 21st century. Now bookmark that book, and let's begin. Good evening, lovely listeners, and here we are sat together for another episode of the show. Today's episode, if you were looking at our show calendar at relevanceofliterature.com, was going to be a dual book episode on Joan Didion's books, Miami and Salvador. I love dual book episodes, by the way. I've recorded several of them in the past, and I haven't published any of them yet, but I'm super excited for that. But while I was researching info on those two books, which are very similar, save for a few key differences, which I love, I came across a critical review of Miami from the LA Times that was published a number of years ago. It's linked in the description if you're curious, and got to thinking about how much critical reviews actually affect an author or an author's work, and what critics of famous authors look like. So we're gonna steer in a different direction in this episode today, and talking about the critics of Joan Didion as a paradigm, essentially, for critics of other famous authors. I do want to take a moment to touch on how Google searches operate, just to clarify how these sources were actually fed to me and in what order they came in. So I Googled the phrase, quote, critics of Joan Didion, late in my research yesterday, and that search came back with however many millions of hits. We all know the gist of Google. The first website on the list was The New Yorker, with an article called Out of Bethlehem, The Radicalization of Joan Didion, which we will talk about in a moment, but the first reason why The New Yorker came up before sites like The Atlantic or The Cut is twofold. So I go on The New Yorker quite a bit to read Malcolm Gladwell's work, no surprise there, and Google was doing like a little customization thing for me because I'm often there and it knows that. I like The New Yorker, and second, because The New Yorker probably pays Google more so that it can show up earlier than the other two in searches. So above, for example, The Atlantic or Cut again. My search, all in all, yielded first the big news sites, so like the New York Times and New Yorker, then smaller news outlets like The Cut, and then individual blogs or websites that also had matches. So I do have to say the articles that I'm reviewing here are a little bit biased just based on the Google searches that I was able to do. Our first article that was, yes, from The New Yorker is, as I mentioned a few seconds ago, called Out of Bethlehem, The Radicalization of Joan Didion, and it was written by Louis Menand. Link, as always, in the description. It's accompanied by a stunning photo of Joan Didion from 1967, which reminds me that I've always found it interesting how many gorgeous photos there are associated with her. One doesn't normally think of a writer as someone often in the thick of things and being photographed themselves so often, so that's why I've just always been a really interested person in Joan Didion's social life, and the fact that she has this unique role and this unique way about her that I think is not so common with contemporary writers. The article itself starts off by recounting the story of Slouching Towards Bethlehem, which is actually regrettably one of the few books that I still haven't read by her, and continues with a discussion of the book's place in the new journalism movement of the late 60s. Thus, another important distinction arises, which is that critical does not always mean critical in the sense that the critic wants to bring the author down. Critical reviews that are praiseworthy have just as much place in the literature as the critical reviews that we all gravitate towards, i.e. negative critical reviews. I do have to say that the article is, in and of itself, extraordinarily well written. I really enjoyed reading this one. Menand goes between slices of what it was like for Didion to be a journalist writing about hippie culture in the late 60s, counterculture, to how her piece and subsequent book function well as examples of new journalism, but poorly as examples of standard journalism. And from there, what I find interesting is this argument that Didion, especially in this work, in her Bethlehem works, is good at seeing and making others see what she's saying, but not good at explaining. And now a point that I want to make. Who's the opposite of Joan Didion? Malcolm Gladwell, the ultimate explainer. That's my point, not his, by the way. Anywho, while I was reading, I really fell in love with his portrait of Joan Didion. I feel like it's an important thing to be able to describe someone with such gravitas and brevity, and I felt that he was able to cover a lot of bases in his article, including Didion's strangeness, her codependency to her husband, and her past as a Republican, a lot of which I had no idea about, actually, like how she voted enthusiastically for Barry Goldwater in 1964, who was an Arizona senator. Wow, who would have thunk? Next up, there were two articles from The Atlantic, the first of which is called The Autumn of Joan Didion by Caitlin Flanagan, which is also headed by a famous photograph of Didion, her daughter Quintana Roo, and Abigail McCarthy. This article was also an incredibly enjoyable read for me. I didn't get a sense of the author's opinion, actually, until much later in the article, but indeed they approached Didion quite neutrally in the beginning. I did want to highlight a beautiful and very true quote about a famous New York City debate about the year of magical thinking, which is one of her books. And the quote is, "If you love Joan Didion so much that she fundamentally changed the way you think, and there are many who feel this way, the books that did this to you are those first two and no others." The further context of the quote is that the Didion lovers of the debate about her book that came out in 2006 are being beaten in the debate by the Didion hater, who's this man, I don't know his name, and they start bombarding him with quotes all of a sudden that they remember verbatim from the White Album and Slouching Towards Bethlehem. And again, I can't speak for Slouching Towards Bethlehem quite yet, but that's exactly how I feel about the White Album as well, that it made a fundamental and radical impact on my life and the way that I see the world. The author certainly does at the end being admit to being a Didion fan, if you're wondering, which is so interesting to me because we have thus far had only two favorable critical reviews. But the author also does make an interesting point that to really love Didion, quote, you have to be female. I actually want to go with my gut reaction to when I first read this and push back on that a little bit, because while I admit that I have no idea what it's like to be a male, I am going to go out and say it. I've never considered myself a feminist in the sense that most college women consider themselves feminists, and I honestly think that enjoying Joan Didion has more to do with your experience with literature as well as your maturity than it does with your gender. I get that there are a lot of observations or descriptions in Didion's books that perhaps lend themselves more to female audiences, but I just disagree that to really love her work and identify with it, you have to be a female. She also goes into a lot of detail about her personal encounters with Joan Didion when she was 14 and narrates a fascinating story about her father, who taught Didion when she was a student at Berkeley and lived through Didion's rise of popularity at Berkeley and all of that jazz. You can read it in the article, which is in the description. There's another article that showed up in my search, of course from The Atlantic as well, but for the sake of time and for the sake of keeping the content interesting, I'm going to leave it as just linked in case you're curious. Finally, the last article that I read is from The Cut, and it is called The Power of the Imperfect Didion, written by Zan Romanoff. A lot of the article centers around a lit review of South and West, which I read as soon as it came out last year in 2018, and did not review on the show because I talk about it a lot in other episodes and on areas of my blog. I didn't like this article as much as the others, to be honest, because I found it to be praiseworthy without cause, or in other words, had high praise and no evidence for that praise, so even though I love Didion and her work, I felt like that critical review could have been stronger with better arguments. The year is coming to a close, and that does mean that we are shortly going to see how well I did with reading Didion's collective works. I do have to admit that I'm behind both on my general reading list for the year. I've only read 45 books, shame on me, as well as my Didion-specific reading list, but I'm gonna do my best, as you will see, to catch up. I think I only have 9 or 10 more Didion books left, so I definitely could do that if I started exclusively reading Didion. Link below are the other Didion books that we've reviewed on the show. There have been a couple, as well as a very important Google Forms survey about which books you would like to read or like us to read as part of our December Dickens series, which is coming back in lieu of last year's success. So thank you in advance for checking that out and filling that out. And that is all from us this week. So until next time, we will see you next week with a really cool episode. You guys can go to our website, relevanceofliterature.com, to check out the calendar and see what's in store. Bye! If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from me, there's a show and a series for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our brand new website, relevanceofliterature.com, for links to our entire back catalog of episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter or join our Facebook group. Our handle is @DidianIn, 2 N's total for both of those. And finally, if you want to support the show, help keep it ad-free, and get access to our new private podcast, go to patreon.com/relevanceofliterature and sign up to become a sponsor. All of the relevant links, as always, are in the description box down below. Still there? One more thing then. Remember that leaving a comment or review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any other Guilty Pleasure podcast platform helps leverage the show so that other literature enthusiasts can find the community. In other words, it helps a ton. Auf Wiederhören!